support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
We're in Birmingham, Alabama. Right now I'm with the mayor,
Randall Woodfin.
Randall, let's rewind in time. You grew up here?
Born and raised here in the city of Birmingham. Born at a Caraway Hospital. Grew up in a North Birmingham neighborhood in Crestwood. Family lived in various neighborhoods all over town, north, south, east, and west.
So you know the town well then?
Very, very well. Super well.
Mm-hmm. Where did you go to school and what did you think you were going to do?
I went to the city schools, K through 8th, Shays Valley High School, Morehouse College, and Cumberland School of Law here at Samford University. I've often been speaking to high school seniors over the last few months, and I've been telling them my senior year in college, I was part of an interview with Ebony Magazine. Mm-hmm. They interviewed the student government presidents of various HBCUs across America, Howard, Morehouse, Alabama A&M, Xavier, Dillard, FAMU. They asked us all the same question, what did we want to do or be when we grew up? And at 21, I said I wanted to be the mayor of my hometown city.
Get out of here. Wow. That was your goal.
15 years later, I became the mayor.
So in the interim, what did you do?
I practiced law for the city of Birmingham. So I practiced for the city for 9 years. Mm-hmm. I was also on the school board, which is an elected position. I was elected to the school board where I served as president two out of four of those years.
So implicit is education is central to what makes you tick.
Yeah, I'm very passionate about it. I'm fortunate. My mother and stepmother are retired teachers. Mm-hmm. My sister is an educator, so I've come from a home of educators.
Interesting. Somebody was telling me about a program here called Birmingham Promise.
Yes, sir.
And I love that concept. Talk to us about that.
Well, the concept comes from, for the last 5 years, I've stood on the stage, shake and shook every hand of every graduate that's walked across our stage and finished our school system. And every now and then there was a bottleneck across that stage, not sure why, but it afforded me the opportunity to ask one of the young people, what are they doing next? And about the second year of doing this, I noticed that young people have this interest in wanting to please adults, but they may not necessarily know what they want to do next. So in my mind, I had the notion that children should be only exercising one of three options when they finish high school. Either enter college, workforce, or the military, and that is in no particular order. And so the Birmingham Promise makes down payments and investments on two of those three, workforce through apprenticeships and a tuition last dollar program for going to college. And so for every senior that finishes Birmingham City School, that lives within the city limits of Birmingham, can attend an in-state two-year, four-year public university and or college free tuition. That model is based off the Kalamazoo Promise in the state of Michigan, city of Kalamazoo, state of Michigan. But we added the apprenticeship part, which is for every junior and every senior who would like to leave high school early, receive credit hours from the school system, and they can work in a career or work for an employer where they have career interests in or what they're passionate about. That employer pays them a certain amount of money, and the city of Birmingham matches that, and they'd be trained in a skilled apprenticeship.
And part of that philosophy is retention of citizens, right? So
retention
that they have opportunities, they don't have to go to the big city.
Absolutely. So this is not charity work. Mm-hmm. At the root of this is about really making investments in our workforce. Mm-hmm. We believe the best way to do that is invest in the youngest generation. But we got to also make sure two things happen, that the youngest generation have opportunity, and then for those who are afforded to leave, make sure that at least home is their number one option because there are viable options that exist here.
And a little crude, but you're creating taxpayers too.
I mean, why not? I mean, there's a positive spillover to this. The more high school seniors we have finished our school system and exercise going into the workforce, or going straight into the military or college, we decrease illiteracy, we decrease crime, we increase property value, we increase home ownership, we improve quality of life. Mm-hmm. That's not crude. I think that's
honest facts. Pretty blunt, yeah. The other dynamic that I find most fascinating is partnership with your businesses.
Yes, sir.
Because they come to you, this is what I need in a skilled graduate. So then you take that and meld your educational program to match, right?
So every day, I'm in an opportunity as mayor, CEO of the city, to talk to CEOs in the corporate Birmingham community. They talk to me about their issues. Their issues usually fall on the fault line of some workforce gap. And the Birmingham Promise is all about a genuine public-private partnership where the city is leading the way and saying, this is not only how we support our citizens and our youngest generation, but we're in a position to help our corporate partners too, as far as our employers who drive the economy of the city. This is a model to make sure your workforce is ready.
That's so cool. It's such a win-win. It really is.
True win-win.
Yeah. And what's your feedback from the kids that you've met and talked to that have gone on and been in that program?
So the graduates of May 2020 will be the actual first class. Mm-hmm. So we did the pilot program of the apprenticeship portion this past summer. We had 23 students. We had 23 employers. The feedback from those students were great. The feedback from the employers, I'm not sure who enjoyed it most, the adults or the children.
So it really was mutual.
Yes. What we've done now is we've gone into the high school. School started in August, so they're about 9-10 weeks into the school year. We're going to do a fall program of the apprenticeship where we scale up. We'll have a minimum of 110 students this year to participate in the apprenticeship. But the May 2020 graduates on the tuition side, it will be for any and all who want to attend college.
And tuition free.
Yes.
But they have to maintain a minimum GPA, correct?
No, sir.
Really? So, interesting.
So I'll give you the whole program. To receive the tuition scholarship, there are only two requirements. You live in the city limits, and you graduate from one of the Birmingham City Schools. It is a last dollar program, meaning we still need our students to apply for the FAFSA, which allows them to qualify for a Pell Grant. But if they don't get a Pell Grant, we still cover. So, for example, any state school, let's say all of our state schools, tuition is $10. You apply for your Pell Grant, which is something you don't have to pay back, you qualify for $9. Well, the Birmingham Promise is a last dollar tuition program. We cover the remaining $1. If your Pell Grant comes back and it's only $1, which you don't have to pay back, the Birmingham Promise covers the remaining $9. If the Pell Grant comes back and you don't qualify for anything, we cover all of the $10. That's how the program works.
That's so cool.
And to keep it in school, there's a GPA. Right now, we're probably looking at a 2.0, which is standard for any scholarship for any state schools.
That's not too hard.
Yes, sir. No, it's not too hard. Not too hard at all.
Mm-hmm. Share some more on your vision and reality, things that you're implementing relative to infusing life and vitality and economic momentum in Birmingham.
Absolutely. Well, I start with neighborhood revitalization. The city of Birmingham is a city made up of 23 communities, 99 neighborhoods, and I often tell people that the city of Birmingham is only as strong as its lowest quality of life neighborhood. So what does that mean? You take a neighborhood and there is a mother, let's say a black woman who has a child or a grandchild that lives with her. She walks out on her front porch or in her front yard, and the lot to the right of her is a dilapidated, burned-out structure that's been that way for probably 5-7 years. The lot to the left of her is an overgrown lot. Her sidewalk is possibly buckling, so it's not walkable. Her street is unpaved. Her neighborhood park and walking distance of where her child or grandchildren live doesn't have adequate playground equipment. It's getting dark, so it's time to come home, but the street light doesn't work. They're home now, they're hungry, but they don't live in proximity of a healthy food grocery store. And unfortunately, it's too much crime. So from time to time, they don't feel safe playing on in their front porch or in their front yard. My job as mayor is to allocate enough tax dollars and resources to address all of those issues I just named. So if we put millions of dollars into a blight removal program to remove that house to the right of her, we put more money into our land bank, which allows us to go vertical with single-family homes on an empty lot to the left of her. We've come up with the city sidewalk plan that allows us over a 5-year period to address making sure our sidewalks are walkable. In this first year, we put almost $1 million into that program.
So it's already happening.
Yes, sir. Yeah. We put millions into paving streets to make sure that she doesn't have to worry about her tire hitting a pothole. We started investing in our neighborhood parks, not just our premier parks. Even today, I cut the ribbon, literally today, of a new park called One Pratt Park in a community called Pratt City. That's an area for about six neighborhoods, but it's in walking distance of all of these areas. We partnered with Alabama Power to get more LED lights, not just on our interstates in our neighborhoods, but in our parks as well, so those children can feel safe. We've set aside a healthy food fund of at least $500,000 to entice and incentivize bringing more valuable options for healthy food.
You guys will dig a little deeper on healthy food and how that works.
Yes, so the city of Birmingham, unfortunately for our 211,000 residents, literally almost 70% of them live in a food desert. Right?
Fast food rules.
So I grew up in the zip code. I grew up in the zip code 35207. And today it's still one of the poor zip codes in Birmingham. We moved to zip code 35212, and 35212, a large portion of it is in the food desert as well. The Healthy Food Fund is about two things. We also created a healthy food ordinance. The whole idea is to find more ways to get more healthy food options to our citizens. One is we had a proliferation of the dollar stores, Dollar General, Family Dollars. On their face, there's nothing wrong with that. But they're playing the real estate game in urban America the same way that Walgreens and CVS are playing the real estate game in suburbia and exurbia America. Well, if you look at it, outside of Walmart, the dollar stores are becoming one of the top sales of grocery. But none of that grocery options is healthy food. You can't buy, you don't buy vegetables, or you don't buy fruit and things of that nature at a dollar store. And so we think it's important that the city of Birmingham guards against that continued expansion, because if you have that, it's less enticing for a healthy grocer to come into that same footprint. And our residents over and over tell us they want a healthy food option.
What successes have you had to date in instituting entities that can deliver that?
And so we are on our fifth try. Four healthy food grocers have told me no.
Really?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, and I'm not ashamed to tell you that, because I think in this topic, it's important that we relate to our residents our failure so they can see we actually are trying. What I've told our residents is, rest assured, the city of Birmingham on your behalf will wade through as many no's as possible until we get to a yes of bringing healthy food to certain areas and zip codes of town, because this is what our residents deserve.
I thought some places they had forced Dollar General to offer real food.
I'm unaware of that in Birmingham. We did put a moratorium on any more of them expanding into our city limits. And again, it's not anti-dollar store. I'll be the first to tell you, I live in walking distance of one. I buy my tissue and soap from there. But this is more about what listening to our residents, what they're telling me they want. Mm-hmm. Dear Mayor, please help us get a grocery store. So that $500,000 fund is set aside to entice. Recently, I met with a healthy food store. I met with their head of their real estate, literally flew in to meet with me, because he's actually the sixth person we've talked to. The fifth option, hopefully something comes online, but so if
you're,
not.
You're pretty optimistic.
We have to be. Mm-hmm. I think I was prepared for a lot of people to tell us no. Listen, grocery stores want to make profit as well. And that business, that's a tough business. It's, the margin is not high. Profit margin is not high. They have different models they need to fit. They look at zip code. They look at income. All of that. Part of that healthy food fund is me realizing this. I've looked at in the past what we give away in tax dollars via incentives. We incentivize everything. In my mind, we should incentivize healthy food as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a no-brainer.
What is closest to your heart? What are you most passionate about? What do you hope to accomplish, and how do you get help to do that?
It's a really, really good question. I think what's passionate in my heart, it's a combination of genuine neighborhood revitalization and our youth having an option. And what I've described to you already is what we've been working on. We have a sense of urgency in both of those things. So what does success look like in both? success looks like to me, that we've actually not only removed blight, I call that stabilizing a neighborhood, but we've also gone full throttle on revitalization, which I call going vertical. Vertical is defined as single family homes coming back online. You know, you can tear down and remove the blight, but then you create another problem, not just overgrown lots, but what I call snaggletooth neighborhoods. And so having more single family homes in our and for our residents, that's defined as success. But when that home comes online, they live in walking distance of a healthy food. They live in walking distance of a park that works for them. They have LED lights. They feel safe on their porch. So we've decreased crime. We've increased property value. All of those things. That's what success looks like. That's place. Success on people looks like that our children can read at grade level. Our children are excited to exercise, either going to the military, going to college, or going straight into the workforce versus doing nothing or worse, getting into crime. We've improved people's quality of life. And so here it is. I think the Birmingham Promise at the root of it says the following. We're not only improving the individual's quality of life, but they get a chance to support their family, which improves their family quality of life. For every family quality of life you improve that neighborhood. And by improving neighborhoods, you improve the entire city. That's what we're looking to accomplish.
Let's roll back for a moment to housing and building single-family housing that's affordable and creative ways to accomplish that.
We look at it as a toolbox, and one of the best tools we have in the toolbox right now is opportunity zones. So in April of 18, we got aggressive. We applied. We ended up getting 24 opportunity zones. And out of 99 neighborhoods, opportunity zones touch at least 77 of our neighborhoods. And so that can jumpstart and accelerate economic growth. But we're also looking at neighborhood revitalization within that tool. Part of that is to say, how do you support affordable housing, workforce housing? So believe it or not, working with HUD, working with our local housing authority, working with private developers, and working with so many others, we, the city, has created two boards. We've created a board for those who have capital, but we created a community board to make sure projects that come into a certain area support the existing character of that area. Well, within that area, everybody's talking about either affordable housing or workforce housing.
And how about Habitat for Humanity projects?
Oh, we believe that plays a role. That's, again, for us, as far as affordable housing, single-family homes. That has been a tool within the toolbox for many, many years. As early as 1998, my own auntie, who lived in public housing most of her life, and definitely all of my life, for 17 years of my life, I remember when we cut the ribbon on her moving into her Habitat home. Cool. And she's still in it today.
What's your biggest challenge? What's your biggest frustration?
My biggest frustration is crime. I will say I brought on a new police chief, Patrick Smith, a year ago. And when I say crime, embedded in crime is not just homicides. It's all forms of violence, meaning shooting into occupied dwellings, shooting into occupied vehicles, felony assaults where people have been shot but fortunately survive, and then homicides. All of that combined, we've had a gun crisis in our city.
You're not alone. You're not alone, though.
We're not, but we've made it a priority to address it. We've declared it a public health crisis. And so in declaring it a public health crisis, again, we've thrown every tool we can and every resource we can at addressing and decreasing this issue. And year to date, with our new chief of police being here, within my 2 years, he's been here one. Year to date, crime is definitely decreasing all categories versus where it was last year of November. So our homicides have decreased. Our felony assaults have decreased. Shooting into those occupied vehicles and shooting into those occupied homes have decreased. Part of that is not just aggressive policing. No neighborhood is bad. I want to make that clear. You may have one or two blocks within a neighborhood that have issues. So it's important that you not over-police in areas that there is no crime, but you find a way to increase your presence in those one or two blocks. And that's been working for us. We've also have taken 2,000 guns off the street in almost 1 year.
How'd you do that?
Believe it or not, what we've developed is some, in certain areas, checkpoints. And you'll be amazed at what people are riding around with. And so this balance of making sure we're not violating anybody's constitutional right.
Yeah, how do you get probable cause to search?
Actually, you don't end up searching. Most people, the gun is right there. Or some tip away. They give something away. Or they answer the question. What do you have in your vehicle? And you'd be amazed what people say. But it's been working, and it's allowed us to decrease gun violence.
But I think it's important to dig a little deeper on that, in that Birmingham, in my time here, my sense in the downtown area is a very safe town. I've never once felt kind of look over my shoulder concerned.
Yeah, so downtown is in the neighborhood of Central City. Central City is one of the safer neighborhoods, but I think I need to remind people, City of Birmingham's growth, or where it is not defined by downtown. It's defined by its lowest quality of life neighborhood. Right. And so in those areas, my attention can't just be on economic development and jobs for downtown. It has to be on our citizens, where they live, do they feel safe.
As a visitor coming to Birmingham, you know, I typically am going to be more in the downtown core.
That's true. I would venture to say, listen, in most urban cities in America, everybody's downtown is growing. Everything looks different. D.C. is safer. I think there was a time you could say New Orleans downtown, Atlanta's downtown, Detroit's, Chicago's downtown, New York, even New York. Yeah. All downtowns are changing. We need, I think as mayors across the nation, we need to make sure we give that same energy to our neighborhood, to where our residents live as well.
It really is your primary mission.
100%.
Well, I sure appreciate the time a lot. I really do.
Glad to have you here.
Well, thank you so much. For further information, find out more about you and Birmingham.
Yes, so we have a city website, birminghamal.gov, birminghampromise.org as well. At both of these websites, you can find out how the city's moving and get involved.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the mayor's office, Birmingham, Alabama. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust preservation initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.